Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Yashoda Nandana Prajadana Nandana. Yashoda Nandana Prajadana Nandana. Yashoda Nandana Prajadana Nandana. Yashoda Nandana Prajadana Nandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Radha Madhava Radhe. Jaya Panchatattva Panchatattva Panchatattva. Jaya Panchatattva. Jai Jai Prabhupada Prabhupada Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada.
Om Shripad Paramahamsa Prajnacharya Sotra Sasa Shri Srimati Savayan Grace Shri Lace Bhaktananda Swami Prabhupada Ki His Kambi Pounder Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Karantara Shumar Bhavagatam Ki Samveda Gaura Bhaktarinda Ki Gaura Vimanandi. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale. Swayam rupah kadamayam dadati svapadantikam.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
This morning reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10, Chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods for Lord Krishna in the Womb. Starting the chapter, verses 1 and 2. 2 is on the board.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'll just read the first verse. Don't be scared by it.
Shri Shuku Vacha Pralamba Bakachanu Ratina Varta Mahashanai Mushtika Rishta Dvivida Putana Keshidhenukai.
And we'll do number two together.
Anyaish Chasura Bhupalair Anyaish Chasura Bhupalair Anyaischa Sura Bhupalair Bana Bhoma Dibir Yutaha Bana Bhoma Dibir Yuta Bana Bhoma Dibir Yuta Yadunam Katanam Chakre Yadunam Kadanam Chakre Yadunam Kadanam Chakre Bali Maghata Samshraya Bali Maghata Samshraya Bali Maghata Samshraya Anyaischa Surabhupalair Bana Bhoma Dibhir Yutaha Yudunam Kadanam Chakre Bali Maghata Samshaya Anyaischa Surabhupalair Bana Bhoma Dibhir Yutaha Yudunam Kadanam Chakre Bali Maghata Samshraya Anyaischa Surabhupalair Bana Bhoma Dibhir Yutaha Yudunam Kadanam Chakre Bali Maghata Samshraya Palimakata Samshayaha Anyaischa Surabhupalair Banabhomadi Viryutaha Yadunam Kadanam Chakre Palimakata Samshayaha अन्यैश्चासुरभूपालैर् भामभोनाभिर्युतः यदूनां कदनं चक्रे बलिमागतसंशयः. अन्यैश्चासुरभूपालै बाणभौमादिभिर्युतः यदूनां कदनं चक्रे बलिमागतसंशयः. अन्यैश्चासुरभूपालैर्बाणभौमादिभिर्युतः यदूनां कदनं चक्रे बालिमाकतसंशयः. अन्यैश्चासुरभूपालैर्बाणभौमादिभिर्युतः यदूनां कदनं चक्रे बालिमाकतसंशयः. Anyaicha, and by many others. Asarabhupalai, by demoniac kings on the surface of the globe. Bana, by King Bana. Bhoma, by Bhomasura. Adibi, and by others as well. Yutaha, being assisted. Yadunam, of the kings of the Yadu dynasty. Kadanam, persecution. Chakre, regularly performed. Bali, very powerful. Magadha samshaya, under the protection of Jarasandha, the king of Magadha. This is a joint translation of 1 and 2. Translation, Shukadev Goswami said, under the protection of Magadharaj, Jarasandha, the powerful Kamsa began persecuting the kings of the Yadu dynasty. In this he had the cooperation of demons like Pralamba, Baka, Chanura, Trinavarta, Akasura, Mushtika, Arishta, Dvivida, Putana, Keshi, Dhenuka, Banasura, Narakasura, and many other demoniac kings on the surface of the earth. Purport. This verse supports the following statement given by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita 4.7.8. We'll chant together.
Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijam yaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chukushkritam dharma sangstapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge.
Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I invent myself millennium after millennium. The Lord's purpose in maintaining this material world is to give everyone a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. But kings and political leaders unfortunately try to hinder the purpose of the Lord. And therefore the Lord appears, either personally or with his plenary portions, to set things right. It is therefore said,
Garbam sancharya rohinyam devakya yogamayaya tasya kukshim gada krishna dvitiyo vibhudai stutaha.
Krishna appeared in the womb of Devaki, after transferring Baladev to the womb of Rohini by the power of Yogamaya.
Yadubi sa vyadhyata.
The kings of the Yadu dynasty were all devotees, but there were many powerful demons, such as Shalva, who began to persecute them. At that time, Jarasandha, who was Kamsa's father-in-law, was extremely powerful, and therefore Kamsa took advantage of his protection and the help of the demons in persecuting the kings of the Yadu dynasty. The demons naturally appeared more powerful than the demigods, but ultimately, because of help received from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demons were defeated and the demigods triumphant. Chant the verse again.
Shri Shuku Vacha Pralamba Baka Chanura Trinavarta Mahashanai Mushtikarishta Dvivida Putana Keshidhenukai
अन्यैश्चासुर भूपालैर् मानवो मातिभिर्युतः यदूनं कदनं चक्रे बली मगध संश्रयः.
Shukadeva Goswami said, under the protection of Magadharaj, Jarasandha, the powerful Kamsa began persecuting the kings of the Yadu dynasty. In this he had the cooperation of demons like Pralamba, Baka, Chanura, Trinavarta, Aghasura, Mushtika, Harishta, Dvivida, Putana, Keshi, Tenuka, Panasura, Narakasura, and many other demoniac kings on the surface of the earth. So it's very interesting, coincidental that we are reading these chapters. 10th canto, chapter 1 has just been finished, and we're on chapter 2, prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. And we know that Janmashtami is just in a few weeks, so we'll be discussing in Bhagavatam the very verses that were chanted while the Lord was within the womb prior to his birth. This is a transcendental coincidence. At the end of chapter 1, there are 10 pages of notes. Prabhupada says additional notes with this chapter. Actually, no, like 14 pages of additional notes, which are not covered in the classes officially. So I would encourage everyone to go through those 10 pages. They're not exactly a purport, but they're extra notes for the entire chapter. And Prabhupada covers many different points relating to the first chapter. Talks about the Shadgarbha, the six elder brothers of Krishna, and their previous lives, which we've heard about. Many other interesting points from the first chapter. So in your free time, it will be worthwhile going over those 10 pages. Today we started chapter 2, and prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. So, this 10th canto was the final section of Srimad Bhagavatam that Srila Prabhupada translated. And we know that it goes up to chapter 13, which was the final chapter. And we've all seen the video of Prabhupada translating these verses, this last chapter, chapter 13, just, you know, on the point of his leaving this world. We've seen the video where I think it's Pradyumna is chanting the Sanskrit into Prabhupada's ear, and Jayadvaita Das at that time, he's holding the dictaphone to Prabhupada's mouth, and Prabhupada is dictating, just mentally translating the commentaries and the translations, even though his body is pretty much non-existent, serious condition, not able to move, not able to eat, but still in that condition, he was still translating these chapters for our benefit. And Prabhupada actually started the 10th canto in January 30 of 1977. And this is mentioned in the Lilamrita. The end of the 9th canto, also Prabhupada notes that this 9th canto was completed in the on the occasion of the groundbreaking ceremony for Bhuvaneshwar Temple, which happened on February 2, 1977. So he finished the 9th canto while in Bhuvaneshwar. He also started the 10th canto on January 30. Now, so it's described in Lilamrita that actually Prabhupada at 2:50 in the morning, he started translating the summary of the 10th canto. And it was just a grass hut, hut that they were living on in the empty land in Bhuvaneshwar. Gogovinda Maharaj was there and Prabhupada's servants were there. And one of the servants heard Prabhupada start translating. So he woke up and he understood, oh, this is the 10th canto beginning. So all the devotees actually woke up and they were listening to Prabhupada from the other side of the partition, giving the summary of this 10th canto. And they understood it's a special event, starting the 10th canto. We hear so much about how special the 10th canto is, past times of the Lord, how we shouldn't jump over and just read the 10th canto without going through the previous 9 cantos, and how the professional Bhagavad reciters, they like to just talk about the intimate pastimes of the Lord without understanding the philosophy which is given in the previous cantos. So starting the 10th canto was a special event, and the devotees were all listening. And later on they told Prabhupada, we should
have a special sign above your door that this is the place where you started the 10th canto. And Prabhupada was surprised. He said, oh, you were listening. No. He liked it. The devotees got up at that early hour and were listening to his translation. So that was January 30, 1977. And after the Prabhupada went to Puri, there's a Pandal program, they did the ceremony for the groundbreaking ceremony for the Bhuvaneshwar temple on the 2nd of February, Nityananda Triyadashi. And after a couple of days, Prabhupada took the train to Kolkata. And by the 8th of February, he was here in Mayapur, 1977. And he stayed here for about 1.5 months for the Gopurnima festival, and after that also. So almost certainly, these verses that we're reading today were translated by Prabhupada right here in his room in the Lotus Building. And if you go there, you can have darshan of Prabhupada's dictaphone. It's sitting there. You can see on the shelf behind him the very large books, which are the commentaries of the acharyas that Prabhupada used for his creating his purports. You know, Prabhupada would see what the acharyas commented and translate relevant sections for us in his purports. So right here, I'm almost 100% sure that this chapter, previous chapter, were translated by Srila Prabhupada sitting here in the Lotus Building. So it's very, very relevant in that way also for us who are here in Mayapur. And we just could try to imagine already Prabhupada's health by that time was deteriorating. He had swelling in his hands and legs, and he was not in good health at all right from the whole year of 1977. But he didn't stop his translating work. He continued on early morning hours, even in poor health, to translate all these chapters for benefit. So this little introduction to the 10th canto and the circumstances behind the translation of this canto. And yesterday we heard some interesting stories from Garga Samhita talking about some of Kamsa's activities. And this verse today, of course, is listing all the associates of Kamsa. A very fearsome lineup of demons he has. Pralamba, Baka, Chanura, Trinavarta, Agasura, Mushtika, Arishta, Virda, Putana, Keshi, Tenuka, Banasura, Narakasura, etc. And there were more also. So in that same Garga Samhita, Garga Samhita is a shastra. It's spoken by Garga Muni. Garga Muni is the family priest of Vasudeva and Adamaraj also. He did the ceremonies for Krishna and Balaram when they were young. So he's speaking to Chanaka Rishi and the sages, just like Bhagavatam. And he's citing another conversation between Narad Muni and King Bahulashva. Just like Bhagavatam, there are multi-layers of conversations. The Garga Samhita is also like that. So there's one whole chapter dedicated to the description of Kamsa's conquests. Two chapters, actually. It starts out with Kamsa wanting to gather his forces or to expand his empire. And here's mentioned how Jarasandha was the emperor and he was the giving protection to Kamsa. He was like the overlord and Kamsa was under him. So how did Kamsa and Jarasandha come to become allies? That's also described there in Garga Samhita. So Jarasandha, he was on his plan to conquer the world and he'd camped nearby Mathura. And Jarasandha had Kuvalaya Pita, the crazy elephant that we hear about in Krishna book. So Kuvalaya Pita was stronger than thousands of elephants. So he broke his chains and ran away from the camp. And he ran very far, right to where Kamsa was. Kamsa was practicing fighting. So all Kamsa's associates, they ran out of fear. But Kamsa, he just grabbed Kuvalaya Pita, threw him on the ground, and threw him back, it says 80 miles, all the way to Jarasandha's camp. So when Jarasandha saw this feat of strength, he was very impressed. And he made an alliance with Kamsa. He offered his two daughters, Asti and Prapti. We know the two daughters of Jarasandha. That's also mentioned in Krishna book. They were married to Jarasandha. And he also gave a very big dowry to Jarasandha, including the Kuvalaya Pita elephant. And so that was the beginning of Kamsa's alliance with Jarasandha. Then Kamsa, he went on a personal campaign of conquest. First, he went to Mahishmati, and all the wrestlers that we hear about when Krishna was fighting in the arena, Chandra, Mushtika, Kuta, Shala, Toshala, there's a list of names there, they were all the sons of the king of Mahishmati, and they were all strong wrestlers. So Kamsa went to them and said, I want to fight with you. My proposal is If I defeat you, I'll become your servant. If you defeat me, you have to become my servants. So they agreed, and one by one they fought with Kamsa, and he defeated each and every one of them quite easily. Threw them on the ground, threw them in the air, dragged them around, and very quickly he had those five under his control, and they became his followers. And then Kamsa went all over the universe like this. He conquered all these other demons that are listed here. We heard yesterday how he even satisfied Parashuram with his lifting of the Mahendra mountain. And each of these demons, he personally defeated. Keshi, he defeated and rode on Keshi. He took a ride on Keshi. Keshi became his horse. Agasura beat Kamsa, but still Kamsa was able to subdue him. Trinavarta, was very interesting. He took Kamsa up into the sky to fight, just like he took Krishna, but Kamsa still defeated him. Bakasura, he swallowed Kamsa, just like he swallowed Krishna later on, but Kamsa came out of Bakasura's throat and defeated him. Many of these demons were friends of Narakasura. When Kamsa went to fight with Narakasura, Pralambasura and Trinavarta, they were associates of Narakasura. But one by one, Kamsa defeated all of these demons. He fought Dvivida Gorilla for 20 days, defeated him. Vatsasura, some of them are not even mentioned here, but Vatsasura, Vyomasura, Bakasura. When he defeated Bakasura, Putana, we know Putana is the sister of Agasura and Bakasura. So they're three siblings, Bakasura, Agasura, and Putana. You can just imagine growing up in that household with your surrounded by Bakasura, Putana, and Agasura. So when Bakasura was defeated, and then Putana came to fight with Kamsa. Kamsa said, I'm sorry, I can't fight with you as you're a woman. Not only that, I've defeated your brother, Bakasura, so he's now become my associate, he's like my brother, so therefore you're my sister. So therefore Putana also joined Kamsa's camp. Later on it's described that, also in Gagra Samhita, when Vasudeva was trying to pacify Kamsa to not kill Devaki in the middle of the wedding procession, this is one of the arguments that Vasudeva used. He said, you know, previously you wouldn't fight with Putana because she was a woman. So how is it you're prepared to kill Devaki, who is your own sister? He used that incident of Kamsa and Putana to try to dissuade Kamsa from killing Devaki. So like this, Kamsa defeated all these demons, even Vyomasura. Vyomasura, I was never sure, did Vyomasura come to Vrindavan on the order of Kamsa, or he came on his own? Because most of the demons, it said Kamsa sent them, but some of them are not specifically mentioned in Krishna book. But Vyomasura also was subjugated by Kamsa, so therefore he was also a servant of Kamsa. So like this, each and every demon Kamsa personally defeated with the condition whoever wins would become the servant of the other, would become the master of the other. So Kamsa defeated all of them, therefore they were all became his servants, ministers, and orderlings to carry out his wishes. He went to Shambhara, he went to Narakasura, he went to Banasura. Some of them, they just made alliances, they didn't fight, because they could see that Kamsa was not conquerable, especially after Parashuram had predicted that only the one who breaks this bow is going to kill Kamsa. Then everyone understood that Kamsa can't be killed by anyone else. So Kamsa had this huge, giant host of demons and followers now, and he had the protection of Jarasandha also. And after doing all that, the earth was now conquered by Kamsa, so what did he do? He went to the heavens. And it's described there in Garga Samhita and the other chapter, the next chapter, that he went and fought with the demigods. And Indra and all the host of demigods that were fighting with Kamsa and all these demons, Narakasura, Banasura, they're all there fighting against the demigods. And Indra and Kamsa were engaged personally, and Indra threw his thunderbolt at Kamsa, Kamsa smashed it with his club, Kamsa threw his club at Indra, Indra caught the club and threw it back, and then Kamsa hit Indra on the shoulder with his club and Indra fell unconscious. Then the other demigods started to attack Kamsa, then Kamsa was supported by Narakasura and Banasura. Banasura had 10,000 hands, so he was able to shoot so many arrows at once. And like this, a great battle took place. And ultimately, Kamsa knocked Indra off his elephant. He knocked Aravata down to the ground also. Aryabhata threw Kamsa very far away. Kamsa returned and defeated Aryabhata, and all the demigods started running in fear. And they all fled from Kamsa and the demons. Then Kamsa took Indra's throne and umbrella, and he took it back to Mathura, and that became the, you know, his throne. Or actually, Ugrasena Maharaj was still ruling at that time. So when Kamsa started his, this is further described there, that when Kamsa started to kill the children of Vasudev and Devaki, then Ugrasena, he didn't like that. Ugrasena was the father of Kamsa, and he was still, in theory, the king. So he actually sent, Ugrasena sent his army to protect Vasudev and Devaki from Kamsa. Then Kamsa's army started to fight against Ugrasena's army, and there was a big battle going on right there in the palace area, and many thousands of soldiers were killed. But when Kamsa entered the battlefield, he defeated Ugrasena's army very, very swiftly, and that's the time he arrested his father and threw him in the jail, and then officially took over the kingdom, sat himself on the throne, and declared himself king. And we'll see in the upcoming verses how he's going to start persecuting the Yadus, and they will start to flee from Mathura. So all these things are described in Garga Samhita. A couple of these names in this list here, they stand out, and particularly Dvivida and Narakasura. So I'd just like to talk a little bit more about these two personalities. Dvivida, of course, is the gorilla. We know how Lord Balaram killed him. But the interesting thing about Dvivida is that he was also present in Lord Ram's pastimes as a devotee. He was one of the generals in the monkey army, one of the ministers of Sugriva. Dvivida and Mainda, they're two brothers. They're actually the sons of the Ashwini Kumaras. Just like in this Krishna Lila, we're seeing how all the demigods are taking birth to help Krishna in his pastimes. They're expanding themselves, they're taking birth in the Yadu family. The same way in Lord Ram's pastimes, the demigods took birth in the Vanara family, or they had children who were very empowered, being children of the demigods, but they appeared in Vanara family. So Mainda and Dvivida were two such powerful Vanara ministers, and they fought against Ravana and the Rakshasas for Lord Ram. So how is it that Dvivida, who in Lord Ram's pastime was a devotee of Lord Ram, in Krishna's pastimes he's an associate of Kamsa and very demoniac? So the description is given that during the pastimes of Lord Ram, and one time Dvivida was made an offense to Lakshman. So they're all fighting together, and he made some comment, or he insulted Lakshman, saying that Lakshman's not very powerful, not very strong. And in that way, he made an aparad against Lakshman. And therefore, because of that aparad, later on, he fell into bad association, and he became friends with Narakasura. Narakasura was friend with Banasura. And by this demonic association, Dvivida also became a demon, so much so that he fought against Lord Balaram. Of course, it's interesting that who is Lord Balaram? He's also incarnation of Lakshman. So ultimately, Balaram killed Dvivida gorilla, and you know, that was, you can see the parallel in Ram Lila. Dvivida offended Lakshman, and Lakshman became Balaram. Dvivida became demoniac, and Dvivida attacked Balaram, and Balaram killed him. So this goes to show that even someone may be in the association of the Lord, but by bad association, by associating with demons, that devotional mentality can be destroyed, and one can become a full-on demon, just like Dvivida gorilla. Similarly, Narakasura. Narakasura is also another very interesting case, because his mother, we know, is Bhumi Devi, the same Bhumi Devi that, in one sense, precipitated this whole pastime. Bhumi Devi was feeling overburdened, so she went to Lord Brahma, then all the demigods went to pray to Lord Vishnu to appear. The same Bhumi Devi, her son was Narakasura. But who is the father of Narakasura? Does anyone know? Yes. Lord Varaha is the father of Narakasura. And this is mentioned in Bhagavatam 336 purport, and also in Chaitanya Bhagavat. When Varahadev lifted the earth, the contact between Lord Varaha and Bhumi Devi, Narakasura was born. So he's actually the son of the Lord. But because of bad association, particularly it's mentioned Banasura, associating with demons like Banasura, then he became also another demon. And Lord had to personally go and kill him. So these two personalities, you know, Dvivida, who was a devotee of Lord Ram, and Narakasura, who was actually the son of Lord Varaha, and Bhumi Devi, who was also a, you know, demigoddess devotee, both of them became demoniac because of offenses, because of bad association. So this is a warning to all of us to be very careful of our association. So like that, this list of demons is given, and they are going to start persecuting the devotees of the Lord. So right in the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada puts the two famous verses from Bhagavad Gita. When he descends, when there is dharmasya glani, when dharma is hampered, the performance of dharma, performance of religious practices is diminished or it's obstructed, that time the Lord appears. And there's an interesting line in the purport. Prabhupada writes, the Lord's purpose in maintaining this material world is to give everyone a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. But kings and political leaders unfortunately try to hinder the purpose of the Lord, especially the demons try to hinder the purpose of the Lord. And therefore, the Lord appears to set things right. So at that time, because of this great burden on the earth, especially these demoniac forces, these demoniac personalities, then the Lord appeared to reduce that burden and to reestablish dharma, to destroy the miscreants, especially to save the devotees. So we can think about in the current era, Dharmasya Glani, I think we could also expect that the Lord should come now, because this is Kali Yuga, the modern age, we are surrounded by so much contamination, so much maya, so many demoniac sinful activities have been performed every second all over the world. So, you know, this is also a very ripe time for the Lord to appear. The Lord appears when religion is not being practiced, when the devotees are being tortured. So we are seeing that even today these things are going on. So how is the Lord appear today? Has the Lord appeared? Is the Lord with us now? Sometimes we can question that. The Lord appeared then, that was okay, but now also we need his presence. How are we going to counteract this ocean of sin and demoniac qualities, ignorance, passion that is known as Kali Yuga? So why isn't the Lord coming now? So Prabhupada actually spoke about this, that in Kali Yuga, how does the Lord come? Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Vatar Nama Hoite Hai Sarva Jagatanistar. The special incarnation in the Kali Yuga is Krishna in the form of his holy name. Special potency is invested in the Lord's holy name, Binnatvam Nama Namino. The Lord and his holy name are identical, non-different. So Krishna came personally to kill the demons in Dwapara Yuga, but Krishna comes in the form of his holy name in the Kali Yuga. Not only that, he also comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to show how to practice devotional service in the Kali Yuga, how to chant the holy name of the Lord, which is the Yuga Dharma. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave five principles of devotional service. The five out of the 64 items of devotional service, there are five that are primary: Sadhu Sangha, Bhagavat Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Nama Kirtan, Mathuravas, Shri Murtaya, Shradhaya Sevan. So the five primary items of devotional service, the most potent items, that's described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is to chant the holy name of the Lord, to associate with the devotees, chant the holy name of the Lord, hear the Bhagavatam, live in a holy place, and to serve the deity with faith. So in these aspects, we can say that the Lord has appeared, that he's present with us even today in the midst of this Kali Yuga, which is the ocean of faults. Primarily in the holy name, the Lord is always present in his holy name. And by chanting the holy name, one can cross over the ocean of faults, the ocean of Kali Yuga. Kali dosha nithe rajan asti heko mahan guna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha parambuja. Even though Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, the great redeeming feature of Kali Yuga is that the process to attain the Lord has become very simple, simply chanting the holy name. So chanting the holy name, Sadhu Sangha, of course, is paramount. By associating with devotees, we can understand who is Krishna, what is the process of bhakti, how to attain that. Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, hearing the Bhagavatam. Krishna also appears as the Bhagavatam in Kali Yuga. We have the verse written on the board here. Krishna Swadhamupakate, Dharma Gyanadi Visaha, Alunashta Drishamesha Purana Kodhanodita. And the Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it is arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So this is one of the questions of the sages, that now that the Lord has left the planet, where is Dharma taken shelter of? Where can we get shelter from Kali Yuga? So the Bhagavad Purana is the incarnation, a sound incarnation of the Lord. So we have the holy name, we have the Vaishnavas, and the Vaishnavas, they carry the Lord within their heart, and therefore the Vaishnavas are considered themselves holy tirthas. We have the Bhagavatam. Living in a holy place means living in the temple of the Lord, wherever the form of the Lord is worshipped, wherever the pure devotees reside, that is a holy place. Ashrimurti Shradhaya Sevan, worshipping the deity of the Lord is also present in his Archamurti, and those devotees who have the eyes to see, they can actually perceive that the Lord is not just, you know, made of stone, but he's actually personally present in his deity form. Pratima nahi tumi sakhat Brajendra Nandan. This is spoken by the Sakshi Gopal story, when the Brahmana went back to Vrindavan to ask the deity to bear witness. Then, you know, Gopal replied that, you know, I how can I walk? I'm a deity. I don't travel places. I always stay here. And the Brahmana said, no, you're not a deity. You're actually the son of Nanda Maharaj. And if you're talking to me, you can definitely walk also. In that way, the deity walked all the way from Vrindavan to Orissa. You can still see that deity of Sakshi Gopal near Puri. To show that the Lord is present in his deity. So we have these five very potent items of devotional service wherein the Lord has personally invested himself. And, you know, by mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have access to those five potent items every single day. Here in Mayapur, we're living in the holy place. We're coming together to hear Bhagavatam in the association of devotees chanting the Mahamantra together. So all these five potent activities are actually in all over ISKCON performed every day. That's how Srila Prabhupada set up the morning program, evening program, that we come together and engage in these very potent items of devotional service. The Lord also comes in other ways to help us, comes as the Shastra, the Bhagavatam. I mentioned already other Shastras also, they're considered to be the favorable breezes. We talk about the material world being an ocean, the samsara, the ocean of samsara. Nrideha madhyam sulabam sudurlabam bhavam vikalpam guru karna dharam mayay nukulyeva nabhasviteritam puman bhavabdim nataretsa atmaha. The bhavabdi, the ocean of the material world. So the human form of life itself is considered to be a boat by which one can cross the ocean of the material existence. The other species of life, the facility to engage in devotional service is limited. Now we have a tiktiki that sometimes comes out of the frame here, and I guess the tiktiki is present in Bhagavatam class every day. Every now and then we see him. But generally the animals are not engaged in devotional service in such a direct manner. So the human form of life has special advantage. So that's considered the boat, and who's the captain of that boat is the spiritual master who guides the disciple across the material ocean. And the Lord is sending favorable breezes. If you have a sailboat, you have to know how to tap into the breeze, to use the breeze and the wind to push your boat across to your destination. So the favorable breezes are the shastras. So like that, the examples given, the human form of life is the boat, the guru is the captain, and the shastras are the favorable breezes sent by the Lord. So in all these advantages we have to take shelter of, to engage in, and that way we can also very easily cross over the great ocean of samsara by the mercy of the Lord. So we talked a little bit about the background of Kamsa and how he defeated each and every one of these demons to gather his forces and to conquer even the heavens, and now he's going to start persecuting the Yadus. We talked about how Krishna appears in such situations when Dharma is being eroded, and how in Kali Yuga he appears, especially in the form of the holy name and the five potent items of devotional service that we can engage in every day. And also how Srila Prabhupada took so much trouble to translate this 10th canto, even in his very, very last days, suffering very poor health. So unless we have any questions or comments, we can conclude here. Any questions or comments or additions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you very much for your lecture. Yesterday we heard that Vishnu cannot give liberation.
Vishnu?
Yeah, only Krishna can give liberation. Now what about Balaram? If any demon like Dvivida or Prahambasura, they were killed by Lord Balaram. Did they get liberation?
Well, I think we also have to define liberation because the verse is there, Mukti Prada Sarvesham Vishnu Eva Nasamshaya, that only Lord Vishnu can give liberation, not Brahma, Shiva, or any other demigods. But it is definitely one of the qualities of Krishna that he, any demon that he kills, gets liberation. And that's quite, in Krishna's pastimes, that's very obviously manifest. Like when Agasura was killed, when Krishna came out of Agasura's body, then everyone saw that Agasura's soul is merging into Krishna. And described that, also got Sarupya Mukti. These demons were so powerful, actually, I meant to mention that the demigods, they're always so happy. We read, whenever Krishna killed one of the demons, the demigods would start dancing and sharing flowers. And that's because they were so scared of these demons. Each of these demons was, a big threat to the demigods. Already Kamsa had defeated the demigods, and he had assistance of all these great demons. So the demons were, the demigods were hiding in the clouds, watching Krishna fight, and one by one Krishna was killing them, so the demigods were very happy. But yeah, so Krishna, when Krishna killed the demons, they definitely got liberation. The question is, Balaram, I would say yes, but I don't have any like Shastric reference to back that up. Whether Balaram killed or Krishna killed, I wouldn't expect there'd be any difference. Balaram is almost 10% Krishna. Does Balaram have all the 64 qualities of Krishna? Vishnu has 60 qualities, we heard yesterday also. Krishna has 64 qualities. Balaram and Krishna really, there's very little, on the spiritual platform, we don't distinguish. By chance, Prahlambasura was killed by Balaram, Dvivida also attacked Balaram. We don't hear the description that their soul merged into Lord Balaram or anything like that, but I don't know, does anyone have any reference or any response? I would say yes, but I don't have a reference for you. Are you commenting on this, bro? Are you responding to this? Or a different question?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Prabhuji, actually, who are the demons?
Who are the demons?
Who are the demons?
Who are the demons?
Why I am asking that question, One way the Lord Krishna is killing them, and the other way he is giving liberation to the demons. So then what is the fun of the demons' propensities in this... Who are the demons? And Lord one way is killing the demons and other way is giving the liberation to the demons. Then what is the fun of their appearance on the earth? The demons' appearance.
The fun.
Fun.
Oh, it's very fun. There's so much fun.
No, fun in the sake, my understanding is?
The point, you mean the point?
Yeah.
See, whoever comes in contact with Krishna, they get the benefit. So these demons were so powerful that only the Lord could kill them. So therefore they got the benefit of being killed by the Lord. Whereas other demons, there are so many demons who may have been killed by some demigod, maybe been killed by some other kings. They don't get the benefit. But these demons get the special mercy of the Lord. And that example is also given in several verses that if even the demons get liberation, then what to speak of the devotees who are serving the Lord with love? How much more benefit they'll get. So we can take some inspiration from these pastimes that even the demons who are killed by the Lord, they get liberation. So if we served the Lord with faith and devotion our whole lives, then we should be confident that the Lord will also be there for us. But not any demon is being killed by the Lord. You know? There are so many demons who are, even today in Kali Yuga, you know, there are so many demons, small demons, they don't have so much power, but the Lord doesn't have to come personally to kill them, so they don't get that benefit. Those demons we have to try to deliver by the holy name and by Kshadam. So yes, these demons are very lucky that they get to be killed by the Lord. That's a great mercy upon them. But we should take inspiration that we can get even better than that kind of liberation. We can directly become, you know, loving servants of the Lord by serving Him with devotion, practicing our sadhana like that. Now, behind you, Prabhu, behind. Behind you.
Krishna. So I had two questions. One is, like you're mentioning about Srila Prabhupada translating the 10th canto of Bhagavatam in Bhuvaneswar, starting from there on the 30th of June, 77. Sometimes I get the question that already Prabhupada had translated Krishna, the book, the summary of 10th canto.
Mm-hmm.
Still Prabhupada took the pain and the effort to start the 10th canto translation and purport. Although he knew that he has very less time to be on this planet. So why did he get into that? He could have gone to some other, sometimes I get that question.
Why did he translate 10th canto?
Yeah, because he knew that he can't finish that because he hardly had, given some.
Prabhupada wanted to do all 12 cantos. That was his, you know, desire, that he should finish all 12 cantos of Bhagavatam. And when he was sick, actually, he was saying, you know, I've done everything, but I would like to finish the 12 cantos. So he had some, I guess, foresight that maybe he won't live that long to finish all 12 cantos. Therefore, very early on, maybe in the late 60s, he translated Krishna book. Because he wanted that devotees should have access to the pastimes of Krishna. And Krishna book, the unique feature of Krishna book is that the pastimes and the purports are all intertwined. Generally in Bhagavatam we have the translation, we have the purport. But Prabhupada gave the purports within the storyline of Krishna book. And he wanted that devotees should be able to relish the pastimes of Krishna in the under his direction with his purports, you know, with his explanations. And I think that was very wise and, you know, a very commendable, wise move of Srila Prabhupada that he did that, because we see actually he wasn't able to finish the Bhagavatam. 10th canto, chapter 13 was the last chapter that he was able to translate, and the other chapters of 10th canto, 11th, 12th, they had to be completed by his disciples. So it's actually very wonderful, you know, that Prabhupada had that foresight and he translated Krishna book early on in ISKCON. And that was, you know, one of the very early books that came out. It was being distributed on the streets. Devotees would read, you know, in the evenings before going to bed, reading the stories of Krishna. So it's a great fortune, actually, that we had access to the Krishna book very, very early on. Otherwise, who knows, had Prabhupada not done Krishna book earlier, probably he wouldn't have finished 10th canto. And there's so many chapters in 10th canto. He only did 13. There are another 8 chapters in 10th canto. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can be very grateful to Prabhupada that he did that. But he also, he wanted to complete the Bhagavatam in the same style, verse, translation, purport, as he had all the other 9 cantos. And he did as much as he could up to, you know, the very last days of his presence on this planet. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Prabhu, I wanted to know a little bit about the history of Kansas, like previous life. And a second question was that we see that in different two incarnations of the Lord before, this Jaya Vijaya were very prominent demoniac figure. But in this Krishna pastime, we see considered to be the more prominent than this Dantavakra and Shishupal. So what could be the reason behind this?
Second question, I'm not sure. He was asking that Jaya and Vijaya incarnations, they were very prominent demons as Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, Dantavakra. But in this third incarnation, Shishupal, Dantavakra, they weren't as prominent as Kamsa. Why is that? I'm not sure. It's been mentioned a couple of times already about Kamsa's previous life as Kala Nemi. Right here in the previous chapter, check 68, Kamsa had been a great demon named Kala Nemi in his previous birth and been killed by Vishnu. Upon learning this information from Narada, Kamsa became envious of everyone connected with the other dynasty. So Kala Nemi was, we've heard about it in previous classes, perhaps you weren't there. Kala Nemi was son of Hiranyakashipu. You can look it up, you know, Kala Nemi. There's some interesting stories. He also did tapasya for getting benediction that he shouldn't be killed by the demigods. And he was very envious of Lord Vishnu. He says that actually Shukracharya brought him back to life. After being killed by Vishnu, Shukracharya brought him back to life, and he again wanted to fight with the Lord. Yeah, so you can come in and see the references are here about Kala Nemi in the previous life of Kamsa. But it's 9 o'clock, so we should end. Thank you for your attention. Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shuprabhupada ki, Gauravimanandi. Thank you.